Welcome to the DMD edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the Duchenne muscular dystrophy community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're talking with Ilan Ganot, CEO of Solid Biosciences, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Along with his wife, Annie, Ilan, a native of Israel, co-founded Solid after their son, Eitani, was diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy in 2012. We caught up with Ilan during the Muscular Dystrophy Association's 2022 Clinical and Scientific Conference in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks so much for being with us today.
It's good to meet Larry. Thanks for taking the time.
First, I must ask you, why the name Solid Biosciences?
Well, as somebody who speaks Hebrew, like me, you would know that Eitan in Hebrew means solid. And this whole thing started after Eitani was diagnosed with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, and that was the name that came to mind and made sense.
What is your basic philosophy towards research in rare disease?
We believed from the early days of diagnosis and even before starting the company that in a disease that is complicated and complex, like Duchenne, where a lot of organs and a lot of aspects of daily living are affected, it helps a lot to have focus and to really understand what you're dealing with. And so from very early days, I was committed to obviously sharing my and Annie's passion for Duchenne muscular dystrophy in particular, and also bringing on board people that have a lot of expertise around this disease from all the different aspects that are needed to really make a drug development program and start a company.
Can you walk us through the story of Eitan and the diagnosis and the progression of his disease?
So he was born in New York City in 2010. We were living downtown and everything was great. And around 6 months of age, Annie started noticing that he is slow in hitting certain developmental milestones. And we had no reason to be too concerned. We started following up on it and seeing different experts. And then about 2 years later, we were at that time living in London. I had relocated with work, and I was working at JP Morgan as a banker when he was seen by a pediatrician that suspected something else might be going on, did a number of tests, and one of them resulted in a Duchenne diagnosis.
What was that like? What kind of impact did that have on
you? It was terrible. I never heard of the disease. Annie never heard of the disease. I remember getting the call on the trading floor. I remember Googling and finding out everything that's bad about it, limited life expectancy, horrible quality, progressive, irreversible, kind of everything you never want to hear about your child.
But then at some point you decided to do something about it, basically to take science into your own hands.
Yes, I think it was about 3 weeks later, Annie and I had a long planned vacation to South Africa with a bunch of friends and no kids. At the time we had two kids, and actually my parents flew from Israel to babysit so we can go down to Cape Town. Down there with a BlackBerry at the time, I did a lot of research by the pool and started realizing that science may be in early stages of coming up with some answers. And with a little bit of help from friends and influence from people I appreciate and I'm grateful for, I was kind of helped to make some big decisions about our future as a family. We decided to have another kid too, and her name is Alexi Lulu, and she's amazing. She is 8 now.
What's her name?
Alexi Lulu.
Alexi Lulu.
And we started Solid. We moved to Boston for it. We got together with a bunch of people. We raised some money. At the time, it was $17 million to get going. And all we planned to do was get some smart people around the table and really have a go at finding what would be the best science to advance to the clinic to help patients with Duchenne. And that's pretty much what we've done since.
Now, at that time, basically, as I understand it, Duchenne treatment was limited to steroids.
At the time, there were steroids as standard of care, not yet in Europe even, but in the US, we moved here. Eitani was 3 and immediately started taking steroids. Yes, we went at the time to Cincinnati to see a great physician there. Now she's in Massachusetts, so it's a little bit of an easier commute.
Is this Brenda Wong?
It is.
Yeah.
We see Brenda every few months. She's a good friend. At the time, there were a lot of efforts around exon skipping and utrophin upregulation. There was a company in the UK called Summit that had since pivoted to a different disease. And Sarepta and another company called Prosensa were doing exon skipping. So I kind of got my head around the technology and the science and started networking quite aggressively within those organizations. And I actually still have a lot of friends that used to work there back then. But I also realized that was the more disappointing reality, that those treatments, even if they are going to get approved, and you know, a few of them did, they're not going to have the kind of meaningful effect that parents would like their kids to have. And so it didn't feel like there was enough already getting worked on, and there would be room for somebody else to come in and try to do some damage. And that's really what we tried to do.
So how would you quantify Solid in terms of differences with every other company out there basically looking for a treatment or a cure?
We've been developing gene therapy for Duchenne for the last 5 or 6 years, maybe even more. And we didn't start off doing gene therapy. We started off looking at everything that was available. But early on, we got our hands on some data, animal data, that suggested that microdystrophin specifically could have a meaningful benefit in Duchenne.
And this is because the dystrophin gene is so large.
It does not fit into the AAV that delivers the treatment. But for about 30 years, Jeff Chamberlain and Dongsheng Duan, both are good friends. I had dinner with Jeff last night on our scientific advisory board. For 30 years, they have been tinkering, if you like, with a shortened version of the dystrophin gene that fits inside the AAV. And we went around and licensed what we believe still is the most promising candidate of a microdystrophin construct. We packaged that into AAV9, which is something that, you know, back in 2015 was making early, you know, milestones in SMA1, drug that ended up getting approved, Zolgensma. At the time, Jerry Mendell in Nationwide was dosing a handful of babies. And so we thought we should use AAV9 as well because it's a little more de-risked than others. We went on and did a serious preclinical package, you know, built a company, raised a lot more money, treated a lot of mice and dogs and monkeys, and prepared ourselves to treat patients, which we started doing in 2018.
Now, on your website, it says, in preclinical models, therapeutic administration of microdystrophin by AAV has been shown to stabilize the dystrophin glycoprotein complex and restore muscle function.
We have quite unbelievable outcomes in mice and dogs, which are dystrophic models that we treated in blinded studies with a lot of controls at different dose levels that have effectively restored to pretty much normal function. Now, we treat the animals early in their life, so it's not exactly equivalent to treating patients later in their life. And oftentimes, damage that's already been done is hard to reverse. But there's a lot of hope that the microdystrophin gene and the protein that it codes for should stabilize the muscle and definitely improve its function.
But this has to be administered before a certain age, correct?
No, this should be therapeutic at any stage of the disease. But people tend to start with younger kids for all sorts of reasons. Some of them are related to safety. Other are related to availability of the materials and the cost of manufacturing. Right. These are still complicated topics. Toxicity is an issue. But what we believe is that the sooner you treat, the more likely you are to help the patient experience a better outcome.
So this could hypothetically help a ton.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about the pipeline. What kind of time frame are we looking at? What are you working on right now?
We are currently in a clinical trial with SGT-001. We treated 9 patients and reported data. In fact, our senior vice president of clinical development is presenting 2 years of functional outcomes from 3 patients at a high dose of our study. 2 years after administration, those boys are expressing microdystrophin at meaningful levels, as well as showing functional outcomes that are better than baseline and where you would have expected, better than natural history and where you would have expected them. In most cases, better than baseline too. But definitely better than you would have expected to see them at the age of, on average, 10 and a half, 2 years after this treatment.
What is current life expectancy for Duchenne boys?
I think it's a moving target because steroids and standard of care have really improved life expectancy. And I think, you know, when we started finding out more about Duchenne 8 or 9 years ago, it was probably in the high teens, early 20s. And I think now it's in the late 20s, early 30s. But it's not good.
Not nearly as good as the research that has been proven so effective for spinal muscular atrophy, as you mentioned, Zolgensma.
Zolgensma in SMA1 babies is an unbelievable treatment because those babies are not likely to be alive at the age of 2. So SMA1 is a horrible condition, and Zolgensma is a great therapy. Duchenne is a different profile. in a different situation. The disease often doesn't get diagnosed until a patient is 3 or 4 or 5. I heard of an 11-year-old that was diagnosed. There is no, at this point, newborn screening that may allow you to treat really early. And it's also progressing very slowly. Very slowly means wheelchair in the teens, whereas Zolgensma babies, even if they live, they never walk independently. They don't even stand or lift their head. So there are very big differences. I know people like to bundle rare diseases together, but they're all very different. Of course, SMA is motor neuron and Duchenne is dystrophin deficiencies. But there are similarities as well. They're both fatal. They're both irreversible. And they both require a lot of intervention.
But you hit on a good point. You mentioned newborn screening. Virtually nobody is screening for Duchenne. And maybe because there is no approved therapy at this point, long-term therapy. And yet many states have now are starting to screen for SMA. If
so
screening
is a good idea. I have to tell you, as somebody that has that kind of a personal experience with a rare disease of this nature, I see some merit to the argument that until there is a good treatment, maybe you don't need to know. Because the knowledge of Duchenne is not a great thing for a family. It's not a great thing for a child. So it's a complicated topic, but I think the positive is that, yes, we are on a verge of having therapies, and we definitely have clinical trials that offer potential therapies and benefits that are meaningful. And I wouldn't be surprised if a newborn screening will follow.
What about the commercial aspects of getting a gene therapy to market? It costs a fortune to develop such a drug.
I think drugs are always expensive to develop, and it's hard work and it's complicated. And not everybody is successful, of course. But if you are able to improve the lives of patients in a disease like Duchenne, where the cost of caring for them untreated is also very high, then you are obviously contributing to the benefit of those families, of those communities, of these patients. And you're also saving the system a lot of money in helping them die slowly. And I think that should get paid for and reimbursed. And that's how the kind of commercial model works. Those drugs are not cheap to make, and they're probably not cheap to have access to. But at the same time, they should provide meaningful benefits.
In the case of Eitani, how much does he know about his disease? Is this something you discuss with him?
He knows a lot about the disease, but he also doesn't know everything there is to know. He's not particularly curious about it. We would answer questions and we would always be honest with him if he did ask. But he doesn't ask much, and that's pretty common, apparently. At this age, he could Google and look it up himself, but I don't believe that he does. He's well aware of his limitations. He's using a wheelchair a lot. He looks a little different. He's a lot shorter. He's obviously not strong. And the disease is affecting him in different ways cognitively as well. But all that said, he's a sweet boy. He's got two loving sisters and parents. And we do our best to keep him happy.
Kol hakavod. Thank you so much for speaking with us. We're a bit out of time, Ilan. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.